Okay, what I just did. Good morning, everybody. I will be speaking in Italian with a strong English accent. Not quite. I will be speaking in English and with a Sicilian accent. And what I just did was activating a chronometer to make sure that we all don't get very hungry to ask me some questions. In fact, I'm very eager of listening to your questions because that's the reason why I'm particularly thankful to the organizers of this conference for inviting me, because this is the first time that I have a chance to discuss these issues with the community of linguists, philosophers of the language. In fact, by training, I am a classicist. I studied Latin, and then I specialized in digital scholarly editions of texts based on handwritten sources. I normally work on Latin texts of the Middle Age, but the issues I'm discussing now apply to every handwritten text, and probably that's why you invited me. I just didn't get why you invited me, but I appreciate it. Probably you did, because I'm working on handwritten sources like those that are so important for those philosophers of the language. And I'm very, very interested in the kind of feedback you can give to me. What I'm talking now is the issue of layers of transcription. This is something you're very familiar with, Wittgenstein's Nachlass in the Bergen project. So when we used to do critical editions on paper, we had to choose whether we wanted to provide a diplomatic edition or an interpretive, critical, normalized edition when we're working on handwritten textual sources. We had to choose whether we wanted to give a transcription, but transcription always is, as Christina said, an interpretive act, a scholarly act, but let's just say transcription, of the text that is very close to the graphematic features of the, to the graphical features of the text. For example, this is not how we write moose today. There are errors, there are overriding, there are marks in Wittgenstein, meta marks. There's a number of features that do not belong to our contemporary writing system. So a diplomatic edition is an edition that stays close to the document. A normalized transcription is one that's closer to how we write German, Latin, Italian today. We need both, obviously. But in the print, we had to choose. With digital scholarly editions, we don't have to choose, because you can provide both kinds of transcription, and the edition in the digital world is a system, is software, source code and software. And that system can elaborate and put the two layers, that's why I'm talking about layers, in relationship with each other. Both of them are important scientifically, because by providing this, we are providing the scholarly community with invaluable documentary information that's food for the thoughts of other interpreters that can give other interpretations to the text, interested in the genesis of the text, etc. But here, we're giving a text that's easier to read for the human, but it's also easier to read for the machine. Just like Francesca said earlier, our goal is for the computer to process this. Now, the computer cannot process moose written like this in any way. For example, if I'm providing computational linguistics tools, they're expecting another encoding of the text. If I'm doing whatever level of more abstract web semantics processing, but even if I'm doing collation, imagine this is a witness and this is another witness of the same text. And I want to collate them to do automatic collation and text comparison. I cannot do it based on the diplomatic transcription. And the simplest form of processing of the text is search, textual search. If I search moose, I search for moose in one way. It's very frustrating and infuriating to have to search it in different ways. We can think this is something that has to do with, only some aspects of the language. I work on Latin. Now, Latin is the most normal alphabet. It's normalized. The Latin we have is the Latin that the late antiquity created, pretty much. But even with Latin, today, there are different spellings of the same word. U-B, urbs or B, etc. Okay, so this is the example of the Wittgenstein's Nachlass. I'll go quicker now that we said the issues. Frondienst is written in different ways. There are even two different words. Moose is the other example that I made. There are two layers here, normalized and diplomatic. What's the distinction between those two layers? In most projects, and this is how I differentiate myself from the work that's already done, the difference is pragmatic. It's based on some linguistic features. In the Bergen project, you can choose, à la carte, whether you want to see this sign, the other sign,
So you base, it's wonderful, honey. You have the diplomatic or linear, which is normalized, all right? Yeah, this is my technology of shadows based on the light, the speed of light. But you can also choose many other features. It's all pragmatic. The distinction between the two layers is not based on semiotic distinctions, semiotic concepts, and that's when I come in with the picture. But it's based on pragmatic considerations. What kind of science do you want to see? There are many other projects working on this. The Goethe Faust edition, the Vercelli book, for example, with two layers of transcription. This is the medieval Lombard text. The Menota archive, it's a very large archive of Viking texts, Old Norse texts, where the layers are three. Very, very diplomatic, kind of in between, very normalized. That's the scheme. Facsimile, not diplomatic, normalized. I am working on this, trying to redefine those layers. Not on pragmatic considerations, but on semiotic considerations. This is an edition that I curated, that I edited, a scholarly edition of a very boring text. It's a Latin grammar from the 9th century, which is not even an original grammar. It's a summary of Priscian. I'm sorry, Ursus, this is the author of the book. But Ursus Beneventanus, 9th century, it's the nomine, talks about the name. And that's what it looks like. The layers that I decided to edit this text, oh, by the way, it's a Codex Unicus. There's only one source that I transcribed and corrected. It's usual because now I'm working on an edition with four major codexes, 300 pages each. I mean, of print. It's a long work. So over here, I could experiment a different digital model of the edition that I want to discuss with you. Because normally, I discuss these things with philologists or digital humanists, and I'm very, very interested in what you have to say, which is implying that normally classicists or philologists not always are interested in semiotics. Could I have said it in a more diplomatic way? So the difference between what I did and what's that been done before me is that I'm redefining the three layers, not based on pragmatic considerations, but on semiotic considerations. Here we go. I identified three textual layers, three layers of transcription. By the way, I could have identified 5, 7, 11, or just 2. It's arbitrary. But my point is, we want to define what we are transcribing at which level in a more formal way. At the first level, I'm encoding graphemes. By grapheme, I mean a minimal unit of the graphematic system having distinctive value. And everybody here is like, okay, come on, we're all linguists, we all know this. But then again, this is something that is, I mean, I think the philology and linguistics should marry again, like in late antiquity, and they don't very much in the digital environment. So here I encode graphemes. For example, this is a grapheme P, grapheme macron. Is macron a grapheme? Does it have distinctive value? Yes, because if you take it away, the word changes. Grapheme, grapheme, grapheme. All right. This is another manuscript, manuscript B, with a different sequence of graphemes. The second layer is the layer of alphabetical letters, and this is where I feel I'm either wrong or the rest of the world is wrong. I hope that I find someone else who agrees with me, because hardly anyone agrees with me that these two layers are distinct. I think that this grapheme O, okay, this grapheme S means the alphabetical letter L, which I call alpha beam. Why so? Because there are other signs that can mean L. For example, PPP in the Morse code, right? Or S, the phoneme S, or the grapheme S, or the military language sigma, you know, all right. So this means this. And the correspondence is not always one-to-one, like Gutenberg made us believe. Because in this case, you have two graphemes, P and macron, and the combination of the two means three alpha beams, BRP, whatever I said, PRE, I can't read, PRE, right? So two graphemes mean two different alpha beams. I'm very interested in what you have to say about this. This is my opinion. Practically, this means that this is more diplomatic, this is more readable, more normalized. But I define this semiotically. For example, in this manuscript, these graphemes mean these alphabetical letters. Please note that there is AE in this graphematic system and in this alphabetic system. However, in this manuscript, there's never AE in Latin. Therefore, to me, these two graphemes mean these three letters. They don't mean P-R-A-E. They mean P-R-E. So even at the level of the alphabetic transcription, there are differences between the two codes. And then, and that's the other ambitious, that's a very ambitious task, practically, I identify a third level that I call linguistic layer, in which the minimal units are words, as atoms, not represented in the digital world, not by a sequence of letters, but by a combination of lemma plus morphology. So to me, at the linguistic layer, this is the ablative plural of lemma XYZ. Whatever the spelling is everywhere, so I'm identifying this by the intersection between lemma and morphology. This sequence of alpha beams, this sequence of graphemes mean this word. The same goes here. Most of what I'm doing is based on the methodological and theoretical reflections of the guy with whom I studied digital humanities in Rome, who's considered the founder of digital humanities in Italy, Tito Orlandi. There's this important book over here, Informatica Testuale. Oh, by the way, if you Google me, you can download these slides, and I'm showing you my email at the end again, so again, if you want to stay in touch. The idea comes from Tito Orlandi. However, Tito Orlandi identified two layers that he calls two systems, graphic system and linguistic system. I added the third layer, alphabetic layer, and I implemented it in a scholarly edition. So I think what I did for the first time is re-elaborating his model and applying it. Actually, I created a prototype, so to speak. The two main innovations that I borrow from Orlandi are the addition of many semiotically defined layers and the table of signs. But I'm talking about the table of signs this afternoon, so thanks again for the organizers for having me twice. I'm sorry for you. So this is what my addition looks like. This is the sequence of graphemes in terms of visualization. This is a sequence of alphabetical letters, of alpha beams. This is red because I encode in the source code and I want to visualize that these two graphemes are combined with each other. It's red because it's overwriting. It's an abbreviation that's above. This is one grapheme that represents a whole abbreviation, so this is a different situation. Two graphemes, one grapheme. That's why it's visualized in a different color. This is underlined to mean that these graphemes mean these alphabetical letters. There's something missing, the third layer, the linguistic layer. If you want to represent the linguistic layer not by a sequence of letters, but in that way, there's no way you can visualize it online because it takes a lot. In terms of visualization, I had an issue. I had to come up with something very ugly looking, which is this. When I hover the word momentum with my mouse, this window pops up, and from this window you can read lemma cognomentum, singular, nominative, neuter. This is the visualization. You hungry? I'm almost done. Yeah, 13 minutes. We're good. I'm finishing. Well, let's zoom on a word again, as I said. Graphematic layer, alphabetic layer, linguistic layer. In terms of encoding, TI encoding, I don't know how much you're interested in the technical aspects, but I'll very shortly show you in one slide. This is the source code in TI. The colors obviously are here only for presentation. Okay, normally, in the W, which means word element, I only encode graphemes. Why? Because I have a table of signs, which is a file that the computer can process, that tells the computer that the grapheme P has the alphabetical letter P as alphabetical meaning content. Therefore, the software takes P, generates P, and visualizes them. So this is absolutely generated by the computer. I'm not encoding this for economy. However, in those places, which are mostly abbreviations, but not only, in which the alphabetical meaning content of those graphemes cannot be deduced by the computer through an algorithm, I am encoding them separately. By the way, in my next edition, from Aldo's edition, I'm not doing this because I'm helping the computer to understand that P plus macron normally means pre. This is another issue. Anyway, what I did for Ursus is, in this case, when it cannot be deduced,
I encode the graphemes with the abbreviation element, which I re-semantize to mean graphematic layer, and I encode the sequence of alpha beams separately in another element. Right? So this is graphematic layer, this is alphabetic layer. The linguistic layer is encoded as attributes of the W elements. Lemma and analysis. Who writes those values? Not me, by hand, but a software. It's called Tree Tagger, which is a lemmatizer, paraspeech tagger, which makes so many mistakes. However, it helps me a lot because that wouldn't be unfeasible. This takes so much time that I couldn't finish the project, honestly. What did I not finish? I did not review the errors. So if you go to my edition, you will see that a lot of those are wrong. And what we need are PhD students, which is a cool term to say free labor, right? But I don't have them because I'm not a professor at the university. I'm a professore contratto, adjunct. I'm adjunct. That's even bad pronouns, an adjunct. So I don't have anybody to work for me. So I didn't have the time to review this, which is very bad. Okay, so I honestly told you the situation. All right, I have 4 minutes in which I can discuss a little bit what's, to me, the scientific advantage of this. This information is paleographical information. Who could be interested in this? Those interested in the history of writing, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you are interested in different issues with the sociology of Wittgenstein, but the issues are more or less the same. This is orthography. It will give me orthographical variants, also for people interested in the history of the language, et cetera. This is the normalized edition for reading, mostly. This gives me a lot of liberty. When I want to encode the graphematic layer, whatever strange situation we have, you know, unius cuiusque, chiunque, whoever, of whomever. The scribe put a space here, but the graphical space is a grapheme to me, so I'm encoding this. And then here there's a line break. There's all sort of strange things here that happen, and I can encode them at the graphematic layer, grapheme, space. It's two different words. But at the linguistic layer, it's one word, right? So I can encode the strange graphical features at the graphical layer and distinguish the linguistic layer, which is it's one word. The layers are independent. What happens when the user makes the scribe makes an obvious mistake? Mobilis instead of mobilis. Well, this is complicated because I thought that the right orthography was mobilis. But let's imagine this is a simple mistake. This is a grapheme U. I encode it as a grapheme U. It means alpha beam U. It does. I'm not correcting anything. This scribe, by writing grapheme U, meant an alpha beam U. So I'm encoding this. But at the linguistic layer, I'm saying that this sequence of whatever represents the genitive neuter singular of lemma mobilis. And I think this is also correct to say. He wrote a strange sequence of graphemes, but what he meant was mobilis, etc. A future development which I'm working on right now with Romualdo is collation. When you do automatic collations amongst the terms, you can't collate, in my opinion, the graphemic layer. There's nothing to collate here. But if you collate the alphabetic layer, you get the orthographic variants. Imagine we collate terms and works, witnesses, having a lot of orthographic variants. We create an automatic apparatus criticus with lots of variants we don't want. In this way, the computer automatically can distinguish between orthographic variants and substantial variants. In this case, the computer will tell those interested in orthographic variants that this is I and this is E. But at the substantial level, at the linguistic layer, they're the same word. They're genitive feminine singular of proprius. In fact, technologically, what the computer compares is this string with the other string and those XML values of attributes with those other values of XML. So we have to invent collation tools that not only compare strings, but only compare XML. And this is absolutely new field of inquiry. Everything of my edition is open source, available on this GitHub repository. Just Google me, you'll find everything. And I think this is very important. I hope you all agree with this, because at the end of the day, you can encode it whatever you want, but if you give it open source and document it, someone else will figure it out and use it. This is my email and the website of this presentation if you want to download. Thank you for your attention.
Grazie mille anche per il cronometro. Domande? Non è un ingegnere.
Lo sbagliamo a parlare.